Day 3, Episode 3. Birdwatching at the Lurie's is the official podcast of this year's event in partnership with VML and Biz Community. Episode 3, the energy episode with special guest Kagiso Tsepe, Executive Creative Director at Grid Worldwide. Roanna Williams, Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of Boundless. Fran Luckin, Chief Creative Officer of VML. Pritesh Sevraj, CEO of the Lurie's. And last but not least, Brandon Govender, Digital and Integrated Executive Creative Director, Joe Public. Kagiso Tsepe is ECD at Grid Worldwide and has steadily climbed the industry ranks after working at leading agencies such as Metropolitan Republic, Ogilvy, the King James Group, M&C Saatchi Able, and Network BBDO. Kagiso lives inside an idea fountain and constantly brings out amazing work from spoken word, copywriting, conceptual art, and music. No wonder he's received global and local accolades from The One Show, Cannes Lions, Effies, The Lurie's, and Creative Circle. We chat to KG about his ethos on remaining a perpetual student, which coincidentally is the category that he judged at this year's Lurie's. Morning, Kagiso. How are you?
Good morning, man. I'm good. How are you doing, Ben?
Good. How are you wearing last night?
Yeah, look, it was a good time.
Excellent.
It was a good time.
Good. Certainly earned, I'm sure. I've really been looking forward to chatting to you. Tell me the wisdom in remaining this naive, curious, what-if-er, as you call it, or as you put it, a perpetual student. How important is that to you?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, like you were saying, coincidentally, I was judging the students and category this year. The interesting thing about what we do is that it's always changing. Every single day is different from the one that you had previously, right? So there is no absolute manual. You can go to school and study, and when you come in, you'll find that everything that you've learned, maybe it can contribute, obviously, certainly, but every day is new. Every challenge comes with different needs that you might have not rehearsed for. So we are constantly having to learn, adjust, and learn certain things. So it's really important to always stay curious, stay almost like, I know we use the word hungry, but I think stay open. Yeah, stay open. The new tools that come in, the culture changes, people change, the country, the world, the politics, you know. So these are things that we always have to be learning, always have to be studying, because we are creating work for a moving world, right? The world is always moving, so we always have to study that.
I guess newness is a tool then.
Yeah.
Change is a tool.
Yeah.
You can harness that.
Yeah.
Right?
That's an interesting thing. Like, I love that thought. Mm-hmm. The change is a tool, like, or novels, right? How do we create work that sort of discovers or almost like pierces the ceiling of last year's work, right? And discovers a new path that the industry can follow, you know, like, so to be a new reference, so to speak.
Yeah. You seem to have this abundance of energy and this drive. What's behind that? What motivates you?
You know, it's funny. Before I got into advertising, I was a graphic designer. And when you're a graphic designer, you kind of, most of the time, you sit by your computer. There's not much like brainstorming like art directors and copywriters do, right? Like, even though, like, I guess with certain big projects, but you always spend time by yourself and the computer. And then I was a poet at the time. So I was this deep guy who didn't say much and all of that. When I got into advertising, I remember my first day at Metropolitan Republic. I saw these people coming in, they were buzzing with energy, the big laughter. Like, it felt like I just got into a world where everyone is happy to be in that world. You know, there's something really incredible about advertising people that is different from other sort of disciplines of art and so on, right? And so when I saw that, I really got inspired. And it almost allowed me to reach into parts of myself that I had not almost experienced. They were there, but I hadn't sort of let them out. And so that sort of, I think I remember seeing it and going, I want to be that guy. You know, I want to be loud. I want to be proud. I want to feel, you know, feel everything that is that that you feel. So I think that energy comes from that. Comes from like just our industry is like it's like and its people. We are very like explosive, you know. And so that freedom that just allows us to be who we are, you know, is for me that's kind of the thing that always sort of drives my my energy.
Awesome. Do you see your student self more clearly now that you've been judging the student category at the Lurus? Does that help you take you back to who you were then?
Yeah. So I like this question. The thing about me is that I didn't go to an advertising school, you know. So most of my learning was self-taught, you know. So like sort of looking at work and trying to recreate it in my own sort of way, and eventually. Obviously, I think eventually when you work hard and you do that, the path opens, you know. But you're right. Like I look at the students' work. I mean, even the previous years. What's really beautiful about the Lurus is that when we judge the students' work, we are not judging it with the lens of these are students. Mm. And even if you want to do that, the work is so incredible. It's pitching at a very high level. That you go, I wish I was this kid then, you know, because they're doing work that is so incredible. You go, wow, I can see why we are as creative as we are, because already someone who's studying is already punching so much above their weight, you know.
That's cool.
And so I look at this almost like with some jealousy, actually. Mm. I'm very jealous of the work that the young people are doing, even at a school level.
Yeah. I guess that jealousy can also be reworked, I guess, and talent spotting and finding, you know, the next crop of people that are going to join you at Grid. So moving into a kind of broader field, there seems to be a sense of optimism at the moment around our sportsmen and women, our musicians. Think of Shimza, Timber, Black Coffee, Cool Odor Song, the name goes, you know, there's so many of them doing so well. Our artists, visually, does this correlate with the health and standard of our advertising work?
Yes. I think the short answer is yes. I think what's interesting about that, and also what's nice about that as you're calling these people, is that I think the creative industry, yes, we can look at it from the advertising point of view, but actually, it's all of those people, right?
It all sits with them.
You know? So, like, for example, a few years ago, we did work with Shimza, right? And that sort of shows how, like, we are one in the same thing. It's just finding the, like infusing all of those cultural things into our work. Because, again, we do have a phrase in advertising, the move at the speed of culture. You know, and I remember hearing that phrase back in the day. It's really amazing. It's one of the same thing, and because our like the sort of just the landscape, the need to cut through the clutter, the need to not make work that's just in the silo that lives in its own world. You need the work to live in the consumer's world.
Yeah,
and those things live in the consumer's world.
Directly.
Right. The sports, the music, the films.
Yeah.
So how can we not fuse ourselves and be at the center of that?
I mean, a cultural icon like Zax Pantwini, I know you've just done some work with him on some brand identity. I mean, obviously that's way more exciting than potentially a very bland brand.
Yes. Someone was telling me in I think we're done now, no NDA anymore. That in one of the panels, you know, there was a brand where the person it was branding for an artist, and so, you know, when you look at the criteria, there's a part that says relevance to the brand, you know, and people were kind of trying to figure out relevance to the brand. What brand is this, and all of it. But actually, that person, the musician or whoever the branding was for, that person is the brand, you know? So that's quite interesting also, like to also create brands that are people, mm-hmm. you know. We've done brands for our clients, like, I mean, we all know, like, the, I guess, the big clients, the telecoms, the banks, and all of that. But there's also the other brands that are the people. So it's good to also, yeah. you know, stretch
and they're obviously directly in culture because they're busy yes. creating it. So there's this thing about creative confidence, and you certainly seem to have it. Would you say that's true?
I think ultimately it always feels like it's something that you see after you go through the experience mm. of coming up with mm. work, right? There's always obviously the doubt, mm. the process that you go through leading towards creating a piece of work or like the result of a creative piece. And so in the beginning, there is a bit of a struggle, right? But each time you see that lightning was struck here yesterday, it struck here again, it'll always come. Like the best solution will always come. Eventually, you know the process. You go, I feel like I'm not cracking this thing. That's fine. Yesterday you cracked it. So
you've got evidence.
Yes, exactly. It's going to happen again. So there's no need to be scared, right? And we never really know how, like, a piece of work is going to land. We only hope and dream. Yes, we can say we back it up with data and strategy and all of that. But the truth is, like, it's a magical process, you know. So Elizabeth Gilbert has this thing where she was talking about the idea of genius, right? Where back in the day it was from genie, like this magical creature that comes. So essentially it was never a person. The person was not a genius, but the person had a genius. So as a writer, you would just sit in your typewriter, start typing, and at some point, the genie would come out of the walls, and then magic would happen, right? So I always like that to go.
So it's that alchemy process.
Yes, yes, you know. So again, you trust the process, you know. So you go, okay, cool. The genie will come at some point, and the work will be genius.
That's cool. I love that. So Grid, I mean, Grid has always shown up like some kind of blockbuster movie franchise to me. I mean, what propels this sense of swagger and this constant stream of innovation and real drive? You can feel it.
Wow. There's so many ways to answer this question, but it's probably the right way. Do you know, like, so when I arrived at Grid, and funny enough, I was just passing by. Actually, I was going to go work at VMA.
we missed that.
I was passing by to just do like a freelance for a month, yeah. you know. And there's something that I heard our CEO Adam Byers say on my first month, going, "What do you bring to a team that's already on top of their game?" And that scared me a bit. I was like, "Whoa, what am I bringing here?" And that made me really like open my eyes to the agency. When I looked around, every single person, from a junior copywriter to a 3D designer to a business person, they do it like to their maximum. Like they do it at the highest level. And again, it might not be highest level according to everyone else out there, but from within them as individuals, there is an energy that you can feel. It's palpable, man. When you walk in there, you know, you can almost feel that everyone is doing what they do at the highest level. Mm. And so I think that electricity, it almost just goes, you know, and sort of spreads itself in the agency, and it just creates like a beautiful energy, you know. And everyone is always trying to better themselves from yesterday. Mm. Like yesterday, you might have left the agency, you know, having thought up something. The next day, you come back 10 times better than yesterday, you know? So there's always the exploration. Yes, grounded in the design thinking. And I think I like the fact that we've got the, like our center as like design thinking.
The DNA of the business.
And yeah, and that thinking goes through everything that we are doing, like even in our experiences, even our space, the curation of our space. When we do the almost like a special storytelling for our clients when we create an event. Like that is at its core, it's from a design thinking point of view. You know, it sort of springs from there. And always just trying to just take it up a notch, you know?
Awesome. So I read an interview with you where you were speaking about the fact that the greatest piece of work hasn't been done yet. And you'd love to be in the room when it is.
Yeah.
How much closer are you to that room and to that piece of work?
You know, what's interesting about that that thought is that it's an open idea. Right,
so perpetual.
Yes, yeah. I have been in a room once where there was the greatest piece of work, and that was amazing. And then I've also gotten into another room and a great piece of work happened, but maybe there's still another great piece of work that is still going to happen. You know, so
chronic dissatisfaction disorder.
Absolutely, you know, like it's the idea of the Big Bang is still happening right now. You know, so it's perpetual. So I love that thinking because it sort of opens me up to go, there's still another piece of work out there. I think that was cool, you know, well done, it's cool. But tomorrow, there'll be an idea somewhere in the air, and I have to be there to catch it. Like, I have to be in that dream, I must, you know. That's the thing that wakes me up in the morning, that goes, yeah, I'm tired or whatever, but let's go try again, you know. I think the greatest piece of work that I'll ever see is still out there, and I'm still looking for it.
And what are your ingredients for inspiration? I see you've got a SoundCloud account. I looked at some of your spoken word work that you've done a few years back. What are the things that you go and access outside of this industry to help feed your creative spirit?
Yeah. You know, like, I guess there's... I think firstly, human beings are the best piece of art they can ever be, you know? Conversations that you hear, whether you are in a taxi or you're just making coffee in the kitchen at the agency and two people are talking behind you. Like, there's always something beautiful. Like, the greatest poetry, I don't think is written down. I think it exists like in real time as people talk. You know, and especially in South Africa, like, I think our languages themselves, just like talking to your mother, the way they would phrase something, it's like, how did you say that? We like saying, you can't write this stuff. You know, like the thing that you go, there's no way you could have gotten into a brainstorm room and then you come out with that line. That line, the way that person spoke it, and it's just so natural. So the first thing for me is really like having a, I have this thing of like seeing magic when magic happens, right? Because what happens is that something incredible happens and then you only see it in retrospect. You go, wait a minute, that thing that that person said, actually that's quite a thing. I'm very obsessed with the idea of feeling it and seeing it as it happens, you know? So I think just our language, our people, the way we are, the way we speak, the way we walk, you know, is, and many other things, you know. I think that to begin with for me is the greatest inspiration. And then following from that, I currently am obsessed with video essays, you know. I find them, like, the fact that there's a human being that goes and cares about something so much and just writes about it and talks about it and put it in context, because this is not a thesis, right? It's almost like every day they're writing a thesis about something, you know? So I really love the idea that, like, where people just bang on a rock for a very long time until gold comes out, you know? So that really, really inspires me. I just had a thought now of one of the things that I'm in for. Oh, fashion. Currently, the thing that I... outside of the what we do, I get a lot of inspiration from fashion. I think it's one discipline that still has the creative director, you know? Yes, we do have creative directors here, but the creative directors in fashion do it so, so great. And we could learn a lot because currently, like, and this doesn't happen all the time, but it feels like, at least I've experienced it, it almost feels like Yes, we have a team of creative directors and all of that, and no one really takes ownership and says, I'm a creative director in this house, and I am going to come up with a vision, I'm going to share the vision, and I'm going to lead it. You know, because we have multiple people, different layers, there's always, I guess, the relay, which is beautiful. But in fashion, the creative director, when they come to a fashion house, they are responsible for even the earring that goes on the runway, you know?
And the runway experience
itself, yeah? And how people are sitting, the music that's going to be played there. So you can imagine like a complicated piece of garment, like the stitching, like the small detail just on the clothing. And then the details, the day they show the work, when that work moves from the runway, goes into the store, like that's amazing, you know?
That would be awesome to bring one of those creatives into our world to see what would happen. Wow, that's an interesting thought. Last question for you, and I've really enjoyed this. What piece of work from Grid really gets you excited for this evening?
You know, there's a beautiful piece that we did, the financial social experiment.
Yes, for F&B.
Yeah, we had gone through like, and again, it's that creative confidence thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or the magic of it. We spent a lot of time writing ads, and, you know, and there were ads, right? Like, we open on, and a man walks in the room, and the lady says, like, we did a lot of that, you know? And eventually, we got to this part, and I remember it being so exciting. We got to this part where we ended up going with something that we didn't have to go... Yeah, we didn't have, like, a script, go for wardrobe and all of that. We were lucky to have found the families that we found, but, you know, like, to have them just come and tell their story, you know? I think I really, really love that piece. And the reason I loved it is you can almost feel like currently there's a big revolution of tech, AI and all of that, and sometimes I worry about reality, right? In this world of artificial intelligence, augmented reality, virtual reality, it feels like at least for me, sometimes my anxiety is that where is the reality part of what we do? Because we're excited about these things. And so for me, it was that, like, to have done something that felt real in a time where we are all trying to explore other forms of reality and leaving the real reality behind. So that piece for me brought me back to that.
I totally get that. It does seem like we're faking reality almost at the excuse of not remaining present or not current reality. And I think that piece of F&B certainly is quite confronting. You know, someone hasn't written a will.
Yeah.
The other one doesn't know how much the father stretched their monthly budget. So those are very real things that we all grapple with. KG, it's been awesome getting to chat.
Ben, thank you so much for your time.
Really appreciate it, and good luck tonight.
Thank you.
Rowanna Williams is Chief Creative Officer and co-founder of Boundless, a new creative agency founded earlier this year. She's been a significant player in our industry, and her career path has spanned many iconic agencies, such as Ogilvy, Joe Public, Black River FC, and Network BBDO. Rowanna was previous chairperson of the Creative Circle. She's also a member of Open Chair, as well as an artist, and has served on multiple global awards juries, including Clio's, One Show, Cannes Lions, and Grand Epis. This year, she's judging the Media Innovation category at the Lurys, so we chat to her about Boundless and that interesting and innovative brand identity. Welcome, Rowanna.
Thank you.
So good to have you on the show.
Awesome to be here. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So let's start off talking about Boundless and that beautiful new brand identity. Now, I watched the film and it was really, really beautiful piece and quite emotive, actually, watching you paint and watching you explain the rationale behind that identity. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure. So when we obviously were starting Boundless, we had to come up with a corporate identity, and I kind of thought, oh, logo, here we go. And I just thought, fuck, logos are a little bit boring, right? And they don't encapsulate enough of what we stand for, unless you, you know, you see a whole film with it, but not everybody does. So what we try to do is come up with something that really represented what we do every day.
Mm.
And what we do every day is we literally start on a blank canvas and we come up with beautiful ideas that come to life. And, you know, we originally don't know how it's going to, what's going to come about, but as they develop, they grow and they develop, basically. So I wanted to show the process behind what we do every day. So it's all about starting on a blank canvas and filling that canvas, not knowing where it's going and letting it develop and feeling it and, you know, letting it, you know, become even better as you seeing things within it, you know, and it's based on what, based on that, the potential of what can be. So just going behind the back end, and it becomes like the line mark that I do becomes our visual identity. And it's not stagnant, because what we do isn't stagnant. And I just find the form of logo sometimes a little bit stagnant.
Mm.
So we try to create this moving, energetic, what you can see. And some of the stuff we do is like, I see this, but you might see that, and that's okay. That's creativity, you know, and different perceptions of what it could be. But you have to see the film, yes. It's me creating. It's me telling you about the integrity of what goes into these ideas, the thought process, you know, the kind of the expertise, the dedication. It's all of that sweat that behind the scenes, basically.
Yeah. It also looks like your happy place.
It is my happy place. I love when I'm making, and I think most people in the industry will buy to this. It's like when you're making, you're happy.
Mm.
And I think that's important, because sometimes, you know, in the industry right now, a lot of our ideas are stuck in PowerPoint presentations and it's so exhausting. So we have to find a way of just breaking out and actually making. And I think that process was very, very cathartic for us as well as a team. To really express the power of making.
Mm, I totally get that. This issue we're talking about, energy, boundless feels like it is exactly that, boundless energy.
Yeah, so boundless, it's funny, when we first came up with the name, I wasn't completely convinced, but my strategist, Stuart Walsh, and I said, okay, I'll live with it a little bit, it's cool, and it just suddenly clicked. It was like absolutely right for who we are and what we're trying to do. So we kind of, as a team, are breaking out of the mold, okay, of the global agencies, and we are trying to forge a different way and trying to bring back the love of making ideas again.
Mm.
And we want to inject this energy of heart back into the work. Mm. And I think the work is, most work is generally lacking that right now. And I think if we can inject heart and people can love your work again, that's where we're heading.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've seen some of your client work in a very short space of time that you've been in business. How's the market responding to Boundless?
We've had incredible response. Mm. We've had very positive response. And actually, what I'm liking is that we've had, you know, clients approach us that just are giving us full trust. And I haven't seen that before. And I think it's, again, because it's three experts coming together and positioning ourselves as we are experts and, you know, giving the right advice, not complicating things and not just talking yada, yada, yada. I'll be honest with you. We just make sense. And we kind of understand what needs to be done.
Mm.
And it's been actually remarkable. We've been able to do work quite easily, because often it can be a little bit of a slog.
Mm.
And the work that we've managed to produce, none of it's been a slog. It's been an absolute pleasure making it. So there's something happening there. And I'm in it, but I'm also watching from the sidelines, you know, and it almost feels like your wings have been unclipped and you're a bit freer. And whatever's doing that, it's probably because it's our own business and we're not constrained by anything. And we can be very honest. Our approach is very honest with our clients, and we tell them if something we think is not working within their brand. We're not afraid to do that either.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really refreshing. You're judging media innovation category this year at Lurie's. What drives the agenda in this category for you?
So media innovation, I mean, it's an amazing category. It's actually growing. There's a lot more you know, subcategories within it, which is really exciting to see, because I think there's lots of opportunity in media innovation. But what's really, really important in media innovation for the people who are entering and who are actually going to win tonight is the collaboration and the synergy of the creative idea and how that is brought to life in media. The one mustn't be able to live without the other. Otherwise, it's not a media innovation idea.
That's a gimmick.
And exactly. Mm. And I mean, there was a lot of debate and a lot of ideas there that we often like would say, but is this a medium? So, I mean, I love the debates because what is a medium? And yes, we can say a billboard's a medium, a TV's a medium, you know, like digital's a medium. Yes, those are all mediums. But are there other ways that, for example, a product can become a medium?
Right.
So, you know, we debated a lot about that. And it's, you know, we had to unpack and really get to the core of if it is an actually media innovation. So let's see if it wins tonight, and then it might. Some people will say, "Huh," but if you really look deep at the idea and the insight and why they're doing what they're doing, some of it had real magic at its core, and you go, "That's pretty darn innovative in terms of getting that idea out there with all those constraints or restrictions and things like that." Yeah,
that's awesome. So your work is undoubtedly very personal to you, and I guess it's probably the same for your art that you create. How do you hold creative integrity with your work so that your initial vision doesn't get diluted or watered down?
How do you hold it? Sure. As you know, for me, it's really just going and believing in something. Mm. And it's about having the team around you that also believes in that, because going in solo as a creative, for example, I'm seeing more creative perspective, and you can't fight for it without a great team around you. Mm. And I think, for me, that's how you hold the integrity of an idea, where we all rally behind an idea, we all support it, we all understand the client and what the client needs, so that the work we do take in, firstly, we know is right.
Mm. It's bulletproof.
And it's bulletproof, and we can substantiate why it's right and get it across the line. If an idea gets watered down, you should rather trash that idea and start again, because what's the point? You know, like, I have a philosophy that life is freaking short, and also, you know, you have one chance to really make great work. So don't let the ideas be watered down. Rather say, let's go back to the drawing board and come back with something else that you still really want to do, because then you're going to give it your all. Mm. When you get to shoot days, you get to all of those things or whatever you're creating, you're going to put your all into it and make it the best it possibly can be. If it's been watered down, it kind of like you think, oh, no, you know, okay, let's just do this, and it may not end up as well. Mm. But if you really, you're making the idea the way you believe it should be made, then you give it your all, and that's, it's important.
I get that. I mean, once you've diluted it, you lose how you described the sense of heart.
Yes.
And that disappears. Got it. If you took a helicopter view of this year's Lurie's, is there a theme that you could title it by?
A theme. I haven't actually thought about a theme yet, but sure, you've got me there. I'm just trying to think now, because if you think it, like, if there's a trend and stuff, like, what I've noticed is a lot of the A&E region is doing work that is brands doing something that definitely is addressing an issue of society, right? So that for me is quite big within the EMEA region, and they obviously a lot of their work.
It's purpose driven.
Yeah. But it's based on an insight in the country that's actually a proper problem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me is a big theme, and that's those pieces are winning a lot. Mm. And in terms of other themes, I haven't really seen. Just generally across the board, I think the standard of South African work has slightly dropped.
Yeah.
And I think it's become more. We've got to be careful, because we keep going on like, this is a trend, let's just do a woke word and pretty pictures and get it out there. Where I think we need to go back to concept and to idea and to go to the depth. What is the idea that's here? Mm. And what am I really trying to communicate? And I think we've got to be careful not to just be fluffing stuff around. Like, it's fluffy and it's, because it's on trend, it's cool, it's good. No, not necessarily. You've got to really go deep into what is the idea and what is the insight I'm putting out there? What am I trying to solve for? Yeah.
Okay, cool. I mean, one of the things that we've heard from a couple of speakers on the show is there's a growing sense of levity and a bit more lightheartedness being brought into the work. Have you seen that in the category that you've judged?
No.
No.
My category was quite serious, but I think I have seen it across some, you know, some of the other categories that I've had a look at the shortlist and stuff. There is some humour, and I think we're going to see a bit more of that tonight, especially in the film and stuff like that. But mine was very, very serious. Okay. Yeah, properly serious.
And was that just based on regional context?
Yes.
Okay. So you picked up your first bronze last night for Bounders, which is awesome. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about that work?
Yes, sure. So super excited. Yeah, we got a bronze. It was for a project I did for SA Breweries for their brand Corona. A beautiful project. And what they've done is invested in a lime farm. So they had a production issue. You know, Corona is a brand that is, their whole brand experience is drunk with a lime. So you have a wedge of lime and you pop it into the bottle. But there was a massive problem. There was a shortage of limes in South Africa, and the limes that were coming in were unbelievably expensive. So obviously the Corona drink is going to choose not to have it with a lime, and that breaks the brand experience. And that's very unique to them. So they decided to invest in a lime farm. And actually, funnily enough, China had the same issue in their country at the same time. So the two countries simultaneously have created these lime farms, which is amazing. But what was really beautiful about the South African story is that they collaborated with a community that got a piece of land through a land reclaim act, basically. They got that land. And that land was uninhabitable. It was full of rocks, and it was just, you couldn't really do anything with the land. But it was in a region where fruit grows beautifully.
Yeah, so, hot
spread. Yeah, correct. And so the investment from Corona allowed them to get the land ready, obviously. And through this partnership, they've been able to, let the community create limes for Corona experiences. So they supply, like, I think it's like 850-odd Corona outlets with limes, the Molotelli limes. And then the bulk of that they produce is exported. And what the challenge that came about during the process was that South Africa, the climate only allows limes to be produced once a year. Mm. And that's a problem because Corona is drunk all year round, and specifically in summer, and the limes only produce in winter. So they actually collaborated with an expert at the University of Pretoria, and they've come up with a way of, they break the limes into these blocks, the lime farm into blocks, and they turn different sections on and off so that they almost fool the trees into thinking it's flowering season. So the limes produce every 2 months now. It's amazing. I mean, I spent 2 weeks or so on the farm, and I got to know all the workers as well. And they also, what's beautiful is they're upskilling the local community to become the next generation of farmers. And I think the long-term investment of this project is for the economy is insanely amazing. And so many corporates should be doing this kind of thing. I think the economy needs it.
That's very
And
tough.
It's a long-term project. And they're looking, I mean, at the moment, SA Breweries and the Molotelli community, they are the biggest producer of lime in the country after doing this, you know, creating this lime farm. And yeah, just think it's lovely. And it's telling the story was amazing, because just hearing the stories of the community workers and what it's doing for their family and how it's uplifting their communities and how the beneficiaries of the farm are the whole community. So they rent the land from the community as well, that all that goes back into the Molotelli community. So it's really a really gorgeous project.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Are there any other pieces of work that you're excited about from Boundless?
Well, we've just produced a piece. Can I talk about that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's not in the lorries yet.
It's got to do with furry animals.
It has, yes. I've actually done two furry animal campaigns recently. We produced an ad for Mazda. Mazda needed a brand repositioning because they were losing... people aren't feeling the brand anymore. So they came to us and said, can you make people, you know, feel something for this brand again? So we created an ad where... Mazda, when you actually get behind a Mazda, it's the feeling. They design these vehicles around a feeling and emotion. It's engineered with emotion. The Japanese are good at that. And so we kind of thought, how does this car make you feel? You know, because there's like this wonder, there's this wondrousness about it, you know. And we wanted to make people feel the wonder of the everyday when they drive a vehicle. And the one thing that that does this is a dog. When a dog gets in a vehicle, it is just, there's this joy and wonder on their face that you can't explain. So we kind of made, we said, this is what Mazda makes you feel. You feel like a dog with his head out the window when you drive a Mazda. And it's just like, drive one, because wonder awaits.
I love that. I mean, the casting was really smart. There's some pretty cool characters at the end with their hairstyles. So bringing this all back into the heart that you lead with, how do you show up as a creative leader, either with your clients or with your team? What's important for you?
Realness is important for me. Mm. I just, I don't feel, I hate the blah, blah, crap, crap, nah, nah, the talk, talk, talk. I'm a doer. So I believe that you don't talk about it, you do it. Mm. And that's how I lead. And I always say to my team, like, don't get involved in the yada yada and the crap and the moaning and the this and the that. Just get your head down, do what you love doing, and make great work that actually makes a difference in the world. And that's kind of how I lead.
Amazing. Really been awesome to be spending time with you, Rowena. Thanks so much.
Thank
and good
you.
Luck tonight.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I really
Such
appreciate
a pleasure.
It.
Fran Luckin is Chief Creative Officer of VML and has been a leading figurehead in the industry for over 25 years. She's worked at South Africa's most iconic agencies, including TBWA, Huntley Scarris, Ogilvy, Quirk, and Grey. She holds an MBA from the Berlin School of Creative Leadership. She's judged multiple international and local awards, including Cannes, Clio's, and DNAD. This year at the Lurys, she's a judge on the integrated and radio juries. We chat to her about her ability to use soft power in getting the best out of her creative teams and client partners, as well as the work in the jury room at this year's Lurys. Welcome, Fran.
Thanks.
So good to have you on the show. You appear to have an incredibly strong sense of self, which to me translates into soft power. How do you develop that, and how have you developed that over the years?
Well, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for the compliment. I guess my story is an interesting one because I started as a creative and an introvert. So, you know, transition into leadership was quite traumatic for me because my favorite thing to do was to get into the office, sit in weird offices then, sit with my art director, close the door, brainstorm, and then ignore each other for a bit and then, you know, go home. And so when I started getting more leadership responsibilities, it started with mentoring younger writers, and I suddenly found myself getting inundated with, you know, you're busy working and somebody comes to the door and they go, you have to review this radio script now because the deadline. And I was like fish food.
Yes.
And, you know, you can't walk down the corridor to go to the toilet without like five people calling your name. And that was quite a transition for me. And I found I had to relocate my sense of purpose in serving other people in a way. And I came to it, a lot of it has come, most of it has come through my faith. I am a Christian and I believe God has given me abilities and a calling. And so I decided if this is my calling, if this is my purpose, I'm here to serve other people as a leader. So before it was just I had to write the best ads I could, but now, you know, I've moved into a different calling, which is to serve people. And so once I located my self-worth and my purpose in that, it just became much easier, you know. And I had to for survival, because that whole thing where, you know, you've got no solitude, you can't be left alone for a minute, and people always want, they need you to review this and look at this and chat about this. It would have driven me crazy had I not recalibrated my life and gone, okay, if this is where I'm being led, if this is my purpose and my calling, I need to embrace that. And I found my sense in that. It was like, okay, higher purpose now. And it helped me a lot.
That's really interesting.
It really was my sanity, actually.
I can see that. So sticking with the theme of leadership, showing up as consistent and authentic seems to be a theme that a lot of the other people that we've had on the show have spoken about. Mm. How do you build consistency in your interactions with your creative team? And more importantly, how do you inspire and motivate them day after day?
Okay. Well, I think, you know, you need to come to every situation with a sense of what can I do to help this person? I think, you know, I very much believe in the idea of servant leadership, which is about leading from the trenches, being in it with the people, not asking anybody to do anything you wouldn't do. And I think going back to that sense of purpose, it was like, well, if my calling here is essentially pastoral, to like develop and grow and nurture and nourish people, then I need to do that with all the things that I've been through. You know, I've made all the mistakes in the book. I've had rough edges. So when you come into a situation, you're very much aware of having an empathy with somebody who's going through something, because you've probably been through that yourself. So to show up all like shiny surfaces and, you know, like glib patter is not going to be helpful to anybody. And I believe that I've been through what I've been through for a purpose. And the only way to make that meaningful is to go, okay, well, I get where you're coming from, because actually I've been able to help people a lot by being very open about my, you know, struggles that I've had with anxiety and things like that. You know, basically my purpose is to help and to grow and to nurture. I mean, I went through some terrible anxiety when I was a young creative, and I'm part of my purpose now is to go, I'm going to help people who are going through that as well.
I really like that. So using vulnerability as your superpower. Yeah,
because it puts you back in touch with what you've been through, and that means you can help. That you can actually show up in a situation, and that's why you're there. You're there to help. You're there to unblock. You're there to reassure. You're there to bring peace and calm so that the work can happen. And if you're so busy worrying about your own self-image, a woman I know called Nicole, a very smart woman who worked with, she had an agency called Black Swan, she said the most profound thing once, which was, she was asked the question about how does she show up as a woman in, you know, work, like how is she conscious of being a woman as a leader? And she said, you know, if you're conscious of yourself walking into a situation, that's indulgent. Your primary focus should be, what do these people need and how am I best equipped to bring it? It doesn't matter. You leave your own personality and your own image behind, and you go in and you're like, right, what do these people need? What have I been through that can help here? And you've got to access all your experience, all your own mistakes even, because those are the things that are so helpful. Where you go, you know what, I did this once. I get where you are, like, with, you know.
I really like that. So bringing it back to the Lurie's, I mean, the Lurie's undoubtedly holds a very special part in all of us.
Yeah.
What does this Creative Week mean to you and the awards?
So awards are very interesting because, okay, this is a bit theoretical, but you know, for me, awards are very useful, not because they're an ego boost, not because it's a creative wank or whatever, but awards are where value is negotiated, right? Where we benchmark what's great. So you get the top creative minds in the country or at Cannes in the world, and they come together, and that's where benchmarks are negotiated. That's where, as a group of informed people, you come to a consensus on what is great. That's where that happens, and that's why awards, yes, it's great to go home with a prize, and yes, we're all competing for that, and yes, our careers largely depend on it. But what's interesting in that context is the people coming together to reach a consensus on what great looks like this year. Where's the benchmark? Where should we be striving? And that's why they're so interesting, because you look and you go, okay, that's what benchmark is. That's where we're going. This is great work. And I think that's what's so valuable. And for Lurie's as well, you know, it's a time to come together and look at what's being done in the world and to learn and to go, yeah, that's why that's great. Or, you know, we should be aiming for that. Or this is best practice. This is what somebody's done with AI. This is what someone's done with a technology that, I mean, there was a thing at Cannes, I'm digressing a bit, there was a thing at Cannes this year, which I really loved, where they made a music video in an Excel spreadsheet.
I remember that.
I mean, that was Excel technology. That's old coding, that.
ASCII.
Yeah, and they did it. And that's so, it's so exciting. And there's some pieces, I think, in Lurie's this year as well, where you somebody's taken something that everyone else took for granted, and they do something wonderful and inspiring with it, you know. And that's where like, we come together and we fill the well. Like, very often what happens day to day is you get a brief, you've got to meet the briefs. There's a business problem and you solve it to the best of your abilities, but you don't always get the luxury of time to go, how would we do this completely differently? And so you come here and you see what's possible, and it reminds you of what can be done.
Very, very cool. So you judged two categories, integrated and radio.
Yes.
Were there any dominant themes that you were struck by?
I think the purpose piece is very strong and integrated still. That
region specific?
Yeah, I think more Middle Eastern here somehow. I got that in a lot of senses.
Different context.
Yeah, the purpose piece is very, very strong in the Middle Eastern work, whereas the South African work, which I like, it's more focused on the commercial problems of the clients, on storytelling to serve a commercial purpose. Radio, I thought, a lot of humor. So, I mean, humor dominated in radio. I don't think there was anything, if I think about it, no, I don't think there was a single piece that came through, that won, that was serious or, heartstring tuggy. Right. It was all
lighthearted.
Yeah, lighthearted, or making an observation about, there's a fabulous campaign for the Salvation Army, which it calls on people to donate their clothing, But it's all about how, when somebody passes away in a family, the other members of the family misappropriate their wardrobe.
And wear it incorrectly.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it was so funny. And it was such a fresh take. But again, just using humor for a fairly serious, once a loved one or family member dies, you have to deal with their belongings. And a lot of the time, it's a very humorous way of just reminding everybody the Salvation Army's here. But they just did it in such an amusing way and unforgettable. So very much still humor dominates in radio. The integrated campaigns, from the South African side, a lot more sort of brand storytelling. What I think I'm seeing as a difference between Middle East and South Africa is that, and I think it's true of the global, on a global scale as well, and I've said this before, that South African work tends to stick to the comms zone. So we're stuck in the awareness zone. Like we do campaigns that raise awareness.
Yeah.
Whereas I think elsewhere in the world, and I see it in the Middle East as well, there's a real world intervention and a real world solve. They'll build something. Mm. They'll develop a product, or there'll be a platform that you can do something with.
Right.
Or
utility.
Yeah. So, instead of creating a campaign that raised awareness for typographers who don't get paid for their work, they created a typeface that degrades over time if you don't pay for it. Oh, so
that's really neat.
Yeah, and I think that's the one thing I think we can get better at is carrying the campaign into something people can do in the real world. Because awareness is all very well, but if you don't give me something to do about it. So I'm thinking about Bread of the Nation last year and VW Night Driving School this year. So an actual real world solution.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, linking it back to the consensus question, does the cream necessarily rise to the top, or are there different interpretations on what great work looks like?
Oh, sure. I mean, one of the hardest things about being on a jury is that not everyone's going to agree with you.
Ooh.
And there's a reason why. I mean, if we had to come to a consensus on everything, we would never come out of the jury room. So what you have to do is just listen to both sides and then cast a vote. And obviously the jury president plays a huge role there as well, within our context too, either having a casting vote or coming in with their experience and guiding. Because, I mean, there can be vast. So I don't think creative work is subjective, in that I think you can agree on what looks great and what doesn't, but sometimes when it comes to, is this campaign better than that campaign? Sometimes there's different points of view.
Good.
And they can all be valid. It's just, sometimes you can only pick one winner.
Right. Have you ever shifted your opinion during the judging process?
Yeah, many times. It's one of the best things about judging, actually, is going in with having an opinion and then somebody else says something and makes you look at it differently. And that's actually really, that's one of the best parts. It's actually very liberating. Trying to think of a time. I'm trying to think of where that happened. Well, I guess I can't mention it, but it's...
Go for it. Just comes out tomorrow anyway.
Oh, fine. No, it's fine.
You've got a time embargo.
Okay, that's great. I think the KFC, make it KFC, you know, I really loved that unequivocally and thought it was probably the best piece we were looking at. And then somebody else pointed out something about it where it maybe could have been better, and it was interesting. I was able to kind of go, and they didn't talk it down. It was just about, well, this piece does this. And, you know, I kind of thought, yeah, I can see that point of view. And so while I still didn't entirely agree, my heart was still very much with KFC. I was able to understand how you still don't have to, like, vote differently, but you go, yeah, I can see your point of view.
Gotcha.
Like, one of the biggest things about judging is just having the maturity to go, there's going to be pieces I don't like that win, and I'm just going to go with that. Yeah, because that's how I feel, but it's not necessarily, you know.
Gotcha.
There was a piece years ago at Cannes. It was for a radio station. It was for a TV show. This is a great example, but it was True Confessions of a Ball Girl. It was a TV show. And they did a promotion for it by renting an apartment across the road from a radio station. And they got an actress to go and, like, you know, she went into the room and she'd wander around in scanty lingerie, and the DJs noticed and started talking about her. And then at the end of it got quite heated. It was kind of over the course of a day. And then a guy would come in, she'd close the blinds, and then, you know, and then right at the end, she pulled down the blind and it had the logo of the show on, True Confessions of a Call Girl, launching. And I don't know whether they tipped the DJs off or not. I don't think they did. But at the time, I thought that was a bit tacky.
Mm.
Like, when I saw it, I was like, ugh, that's a bit of a cheap tactic. Mm. But in the debate, in the room, I kind of started to appreciate it for the cheeky... And this was years ago. It was years before this kind of thing was routinely done. It was fresh enough then that it, you know... And I kind of saw the merit of it, and I've actually gotten to like it more and more over the years. I often use it as a reference, just because it's...
It was ages with...
Yeah.
A little bit better, like a wine.
Yeah, so...
So bringing it back to VML, what is the signature work or the imprint that you want VML to be known for in South Africa?
So what I've said to you about being, you know, being caught in the communications zone, I think what I would love, and I think VML possibly uniquely has the ability to execute across both brand experience and commerce. So the work I really love at Cannes now is the pieces where it solves a commercial problem as well as a brand. So all the work for Oreo, where they've literally made everything, a hamburger menu, a barcode, they've made it into an Oreo. And it sells products. I love that kind of work. And I think VML... that's the kind of work I want to do, and I think we are fairly uniquely poised to do that, because we have that deep speciality across disciplines like UX, commerce, data, but we also have a brand storytelling experience.
Very cool.
that's what I'd love to do. That work that, you know, it's kind of almost it's an act, but there's a communication storytelling aspect to it. So if you look at the rice brand, the can, that they ran a promotion and the prizes were paid on the rice. Yeah. So that required integration into the factory floor, into
the
packaging, into the manufacturing. Yeah, it required integration there and the kind of knowledge that knew how to do that without disrupting the whole production process. But yet there was also a massive storytelling piece, because they did all this funny commercial about people trying to get the rice out of the cooking pot, and I mean, there was great storytelling. Even the idea is a storytelling idea, right? Because it's about, you know, people wanting the prize. So they've literally made it that getting the prize is incredibly precarious because it's on the rice and you might have eaten the rice. So
you might have swallowed your winning.
And inherently in that is a fabulous sense of storytelling and drama. They're imbued a promotion with drama, you know, which is delightful. And that's the kind of work I'd love to do.
Good. Yeah. And if we looked at the wider view, the South African landscape, do you think we're at a pivot point where we're now able to accelerate our creative work back to where it was a few years ago?
I think, you know, the first step is always acknowledging there's a problem. And yeah. I think we've acknowledged there's a problem. I think that discussion session yesterday was very, very valuable. I think it was beautifully done. It was very valuable. And I think it's the first step is going, okay, we may have a problem. I think it's something you have to work on every year. I don't think it's something, it's not like a roller coaster where you set it in motion and off it goes. I think you actually have to be conscious about it every year, you know, and every year you've got to look, because things shift every year. So, you know, like what happened to NFTs? Like a year ago, everyone was going, oh, we must do something with NFTs. Now it's just a bit embarrassing. And the same thing happened with QR codes, actually. They came out, it was the new thing, and then everyone was too embarrassed to use them, and now they're coming back. They're actually quite cool, you know what I mean? So it was that, it's that adoption curve, but sometimes also it's finding your way into the utility of it is a journey. And so I think every year you've got to sit and go, what does good work look like this year? What are we going to focus on this year? And there are some, like AI as well. I think at the beginning, well, the case study said, we used AI. And like it was like, we used AI, where's my award?
Yeah.
And now what's going on is that, you know, when I've been in creative board reviews for VML, everyone's going, using AI is not the idea. AI helped you do the idea.
Yeah, it's like using Adobe Illustrator.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't go, oh, we used Photoshop to, yeah. But that's been a journey, because everyone was like, that was the idea at first, and everyone was like, no, that's not the idea. So I think you have to renegotiate every year what great looks like for you and how you're going to do it. Otherwise, you just fall into the trap of best practice every year, right? You just go and get the template. You know, you go and get the PowerPoint document from a year ago, and you go, well, that worked a storm for, you know. And I think that's what some of the that's a consultancy model, right? So here's the best practice. Worked a storm for five of our other clients. Here's, you know. And you can do that. It's probably very profitable.
Yeah, that comes back all the way back to your point where what you love about the Lurys is that you reestablish the benchmark every year.
And that's the thing, it's got to be every year, because things change every year. Stuff that was clever 5 years ago isn't now. Things that were tonally appropriate, 5 years ago might not be now. And there's new technology. So that's what's so exciting about it. You can never just go, okay, I've arrived. You know, we know how to do this awards thing. And then, romp home with it.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brian Luckin, it's been awesome chatting.
Thank you. It has been fun.
Good luck tonight.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully you bring some birds back.
I do hope so. It is always a lovely feeling, and it seems to get harder to win every year. So, yeah, let's see.
Awesome. Thanks for the chat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our next guest is Pritesh Sevrash, CEO of The Lurys. How are you doing, Pritesh?
Great. Not too bad. Maybe that's a lie. I'm a little tired, to be honest, but I'm like really excited about everything that's happening.
So when does day one of the Lurys planning start each year?
I believe for next year's award, that will be tomorrow.
So no rest for the wicked.
No, it never. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about this year. How's it felt to you?
I mean, it's felt fantastic. You know, my key thing is we love the industry and we do everything we can to bring this industry together in a space that makes them feel motivated, allows them to basically be able to network with the people that they know and love, but then also introduce new people into the mix. And therefore, you know, you'll have South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana, Lebanon to Dubai, and all of these different places actually coming together at Lurys Creative Week.
Amazing. How's the growth been compared to last year?
significantly greater number of entries.
Wow.
So the final number I need to tell you, but you're looking at roughly a minimum of 15% more entries this year than there were last year. But that number's, that's on the lower end. It'll probably be a little bit higher than that.
Wow, that's amazing. And tell me, from a corporate involvement point of view, are you seeing more growth in sponsors and marketers joining?
Significantly greater involvement as well, because again, what you're finding is marketers realize the value of taking ownership of the lorries. They are owners of the lorries. Mm. Like the brand communications industry owns the lorries. Yeah. And then marketers are just now playing a greater role in the whole process itself. And then also realizing the power of the lorries to create an impact on the end result of the brand. And therefore, it needs to be supported as an institution.
That's fantastic. So performance-wise as an industry, there was a talk yesterday that Carl Willoughby held in terms of the standard of South African creativity and acknowledging that we're not at our best at the moment. How do we feel that can change?
Yeah, and so here's the key thing. We have the best talent that's happening out there right now. I mean, one of the key things you need to look at is look at the student awards, look at the caliber of the student work, and you won't find a single person telling you the caliber is not great. Somehow, something is happening where you've got all of this raw talent that's filtering into the industry, but it's not creating work that appeals to consumers.
Mm.
So what we've got to do is and take a hard look with, you know, brands and agencies and the brand agency partnership and go, what is happening in this partnership that is taking all of this amazing raw talent and instead of amplifying it because you're putting them in the right kind of circles, is actually diminishing its ability to create impact. And I think it's not a monadic conversation. It's not like agencies need to have it. It's not like brands need to have it. Agencies and brands as a partnership are on the same mission and need to have this discussion together.
Talking categories, so B2B was a new category this year. How is that received? How is that supported? And what has that done for corporates looking at creativity as an investment?
Yeah, no, B2B, I think, is a reality of the world we live in right now, where a lot more businesses need to speak to businesses in order to deliver their objectives. And when we had a look at it, you know, the lorries needs to ensure that it stays relevant in every part.
Yeah.
Our key thing is you cannot win a lorry if you don't demonstrate innovation. So we should be innovative at the onset. And one of the ways we're innovative is we're always looking at what's happening in the industry.
Mm.
How are the ways that brands and agencies are trying to connect with other brands or consumers? And is that represented in the lorries? And if it's not represented, we make sure that we make that change. And that's how B2B creativity came about.
Fantastic. Cape Town is a city. Been showing off today. I know when Lorries Week starts, it automatically clears the rain. But how has the city of Cape Town welcomed in the creative industry this week?
Yeah, no, I mean, we have a fantastic partnership with the city of Cape Town. The governance in the city is nothing short of spectacular. I mean, generally, I can tell you in terms of relationships, in terms of the way their systems, their processes, the relationship they have with us. And then to take all of that good governance and then the amount of support where they go, we get access to be able to utilize amazing spaces like the City Hall for our judging and the awards, to have people like the mayor being able to come to the mayor's brunch, to having key leadership of the city of Cape Town supporting lorries at every single step of the way. So it is really a great partnership and the city does everything it can. I was with Leonora D'Souza Silva, who's the head of events of the city of Cape Town this morning. And already the key thing they keep thinking is, how can we do better?
Amazing.
And it's refreshing to be able to have a partner who's at every answer doesn't go, hey, we've done something great, that's fine, bye-bye. But immediately thinking, how can we do better? That's really refreshing.
So no resting on the laurels.
No resting.
So whilst the city's pushing forward, where do you see the lorries going forward for next year and beyond?
I mean, I don't know. In terms of a venue?
No, not a venue.
Oh,
just in
venue.
Terms of the overall vision of the show week.
So as I highlighted earlier, our key thing is innovation and trying to innovate. And obviously looked at the categories, but one of the things we introduced this year was a lorries brand dinner, which was supported by the SABC. That's innovation. That's something new that didn't exist. Mm. And we created a platform for greater connection between brands and agencies. I think one of the key things that I'm really interested in doing is continuing this path of innovation, trying to figure out how within the week itself we can innovate. But the lorries is a year-round initiative. We work throughout the entire year. We've got programs like our youth committee, our young creative future scholarship that is happening. So all of these different programs are continuously happening. We just keep amplifying and growing and supporting the industry in lots of different ways that we can.
Touching on growth, the student category, that's obviously the industry of tomorrow. Mm-hmm. How's that grown? How's that developed over this last year?
Yeah, I mean, when I chatted to the jury president on the student category, who's Dion Harface from TikTok for Business, you know, we sit down and we look at scoring the medal, and she had so many pieces that she wanted to award even higher medal goals and stuff like this. Because she goes, like, that's the caliber of the work. In fact, we ended up awarding more goals in student category than we were supposed to because the caliber of the work is so good. So, as I said, right now what we have is the raw talent and interest in the brand communications industry is robust, it's sound, and that's demonstrated on the Louis stage by the talent that's winning at that set. So, as long as we have these systems, I also think as schools that are out there, whether you're the Red and Yellows, the AAAs, the Vegas, the Open Windows, Cape Town Creative Academy, whoever you are, the key thing you need to do is constantly innovate because the market's changing. And I'm really excited that when I spend time with the schools, I see them pushing innovation. I see them interested in doing things differently and serving their students a lot better. And ultimately, as long as they continue that mission, we will get better talent into the industry.
Well, I guess a healthier ecosystem, which makes our job more pronounced in keeping the talent in this country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because again, as you've highlighted, within the South African context, a lot of talent are now looking overseas. Mm. They're looking out and going, how can we get out of it? I met this amazing young creative so I spoke at the Red and Yellow graduation earlier this year. Yeah. Met an amazing young copywriter. She came to me and we had a chat and she won the awards and did amazing work. And then we reconnected again a while later, and she goes, Pritesh, you know, it's me, and I just want you to know, I can get a job in the industry. Wow. I'm working at a travel agency. So she's a copywriter. We have a shortage of copywriters. Mm. That's the first problem. So we have great talent that's being trained, and we claim to have a shortage. But when they are trained and they do the courses, we don't hire them. That's a fault of us as an industry. And then what I've been doing is I told her, come. So at Louis Creative Week, I managed to reconnect with her. Literally walked her to chief creative officers around the events in the building at the Rockefeller where we all are based and said, by the way, here's an amazing copywriter. Hire. Yeah. I'm waiting for that story from Louis Creative Week where she's going to come. There's a story coming here. She's going to get a job in the industry and we're going to get this copywriter in. But for every one of her, I can't even quantify how many more don't have a job. And we need to support them.
Gosh, that really is a big problem. So to wrap up, it's the final night of the Louis tonight. What are you most looking forward to?
I think the key thing I'm really looking forward to right now is just to see the results and have them out. So it's going to be spectacular and fantastic.
Brilliant. Wish you lots of luck and thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Brandon Govender is Digital and Integrated Executive Creative Director at industry powerhouse Joe Public. He initially started his career at Tequila TBWA, followed by stints at Espresso, FCB Durban, and has now been at Joe Public for over 3 years. Additionally, Brandon has a BCom from the University of KZN, as well as a postgrad and digital strategy diplomas from Vega. At this year's Louis, Brandon is a member of the B2B Creativity Jury. He has a strong sense of provenance and is proud of his Durban roots. This is shown in his passion and support for work from the region, irrespective of which agency created it. We chat to him about where the different creative signatures exist at a regional level and what that means. How's it, Brandon? How are you?
How's it been? How are you doing? Man.
Great to have you join. I'm doing great.
No, thank you very much for inviting me.
Such a pleasure. So I think the first thing is you seem to be very proud of your creative roots. And having spent some time living in Durban as well, I've noticed a very strong sense of identity among creatives that live there. What do you think the reason for this is?
So I think if you really look at it, for a very long time, Durban's always been kind of looked down upon in terms of like the level of creativity. And it's been a really long time since we've been punching in the way that we should be doing. If you think back to like when I started off in this industry like 20 years ago, the kind of work that was coming out of Durban was really good. and a lot of really strong design work, you know, championed by the likes of like Garth Walker at Orange Juice, Richard Hart at Disturbance. It was really incredible work that was like groundbreaking, of international class. And we haven't really had that sort of thing for a really long time. You know, we've had little pockets of excellence throughout, but I think the consistency is something that we really need to strive towards and really achieve. So I think for me, part of my mandate is to really push creativity in the region. So it's not just about pushing in the public, because you know, you can't exist in isolation. You need agencies around you.
You need an ecosystem.
You have to have that ecosystem to build a healthy agency culture and healthy creative environment for everyone to thrive.
Totally get that. I mean, you mentioned some of the icons that have come from there. I mean, you're also in the company of Nathan Reddy, Black Coffee.
Yeah.
You know, it's across the board. Sibusiso Duma, in terms of his artwork. Do you feel that there's something region-specific in terms of the creativity that comes out of Durban and the area of KZN?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think when you look at the kind of work that we should be producing, we're just not producing enough of that. So we need to have stuff that is reflective of the culture and of the region and of the people. So we have tried to kind of do that ourselves. We've done some really good work in the past for the likes of Isilezwe, which is like the biggest isiZulu newspaper in South Africa, but like it's from KZN. So you know, we've really pushed those sort of things. We've won awards for the for that kind of work, but you need more of that, and you need more agencies and more clients to buy into why the power of creativity is so important.
Totally get that. Coming back to the power of creativity, you judged B2B creativity, which was in its first year at the Lurie's this year. How challenging is B2B for an agency? I mean, I know in our own context, we've struggled with that in the past. How have you overcome those challenges, firstly at Joe Public? And what do you see in the entries in this category that shows that people are now getting to grips with it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think we, because it's the first time the Lurie's have done it, we kind of grappled a little bit with what is the criteria for B2B? Does this measure up to that? Is this more B2C than B2B? That's quite an interesting thing. And it, we had like really robust debates about those kind of things on the jury. And I think ultimately, because it was the first time we'd done this, I think there's a lot of learnings that even the judges took out of it in terms of like what to look for in that category. I think we had some really good jury chairpersons that actually helped us and guided us along the way. And the quality of the work you could see was really good. So the stuff that was awarded the highest sort of prizes, you could really see the caliber of that work. And I mean, some of that work actually has even won at Cannes in the B2B category. So you can see the caliber of the work that's there. It's, I think people have this assumption about new categories, especially that it's low-hanging fruit. We're going to empty this as an agency. We're going to get a
smother goal. The category with entries,
you know? And we're going to all walk away with goals. And that's not the case. I think, especially if you look at the overall quality of the work at the Lurie's this year, it's exceptionally high, which is reflected in the in the work that's been awarded and not awarded as well. So you've had some really good work that has just been finalist. And I think that's testament to the sheer quality of the really exceptional work that is shown through.
Also, I guess, the integrity of the judging process.
Absolutely, yeah.
So bringing it back to Joe Public, Joe Public has always invested pretty significantly into its creative presence.
Yeah.
Does that translate into greater market share via new business? Do people phone you on a Monday and go, hey, we saw you on a stage 200 times, we're in?
And that, I think that's the interesting question everyone always asks. You know, what is this value that you assign to creativity, and do marketers see the same value in it? So, you know, there's empirical evidence that the award-winning creative work is more effective than the wallpapers. You know, that is, you can't even argue about that. That is actually what happens. So just based on that, you know, you always have to push for the the world-class creative work because you know it's ultimately more effective for your client. We are ultimately the best at Joe Public to have the kinds of clients that we do that really want us to push the envelope and really push creativity. I mean, case in point is our NetBank clients, our Chicken Licken client. You know, they really understand the value of creativity and what value it adds to their, even to their bottom line. Yeah. I think that's, you know, you're not going to invest money in your marketing and your advertising if you're not getting the return on it. That is, there's no two ways about that.
Yeah.
So time and time again, every single year, to have that investment from these clients that is recurring is testament to the belief that they have that the creative product that we are pushing for them is actually effective and actually contributes to their financial bottom line.
That's great. So coming back to your entries this year, what pieces of work are you most excited and proud about?
Yeah, so it's always interesting when you ask those kinds of questions, you know. So there's a few pieces that we're proud of all the work.
Yes.
There's a couple of pieces that we are exceptionally proud of. Mm. So NetBank Youth Honours Board, that campaign is, you know, I still get incredibly emotional when I watch it, and I've seen it so many times because it really resonates and it's so authentic and genuine. And it's just pure emotion, and it's something that's so important. You know, I think we need to be telling more of those stories as South Africans. So for me, that is like the one piece that I'm exceptionally proud of. Also for NetBank is the Bank Your Time campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
Really,
that
a lot
also
of
pulls on the heart.
Does pull on the heart, but also it really drills down to one of the big selling points of NetBank's digital products. You know, the fact that they actually save you time, so you can actually do other things. So you know, it's really important to not just do creative work just for the sake of being creative. It's how do you really sell these really critical value propositions of the client and get these across in that way. And the only way you can do that is by doing it creatively.
Yeah. You seem like a very calm and measured leader. How do you show up on your best and your worst days?
Yeah, I try to be calm as far as possible. I think it can be unnerving for some people to have someone very calm when things are seemingly on fire. Mm. But I think my approach is, well, you can't really like keep calm amongst everyone else if you're going to panic yourself. So you've got to have that calm persona, try and sort these things out. By all means, when everyone's like left, you can like freak out. Do that in private, you know?
Mm.
But I think it's, you have to lead with composure and try and get that composure across onto your people as well.
Gotcha. I mean, creativity, and Fran mentioned it earlier, the Lurie's is such a good thing to refill her well by being here. How do you do that outside of Lurie's Week? Like, where do you go to for your inspiration?
Yeah.
Where do you refill?
So I'm really blessed with the creative team that I've got, and also the greater Joe Public family that, that we've got. You know, I think it, you know, I'm going to say it because everyone says it. Everyone thinks Joe Public is a cult. Mm. And yes, we are a cult, but we're the best kind of cult.
Mm.
You know, we fight for each other.
Mm.
We are there for each other. We are there for our clients. And we push creativity. We believe in the power of creativity. So outside of Lurie's, we are doing everything that is revolving around coming back to Lurie's.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It's like, how do you plan these things and how do you actually be intentional about how you're going to deliver your creative product? That's what it's actually about. So it's not about, you don't do things and accidentally find success. You have to be very deliberate about that and intentional. And it all goes through planning. We sit down with each and every single person. We plan how we're going to do this. We sit down with each client. We also plan how we're going to do that with them. You know, it's really important. So whatever you're doing, you know what you're going to be achieving out of this. You have some sort of idea as to where you want to be. So if you don't meet those targets, that's also fine, because any sort of incremental improvement and measurement of that is critical to business success. Mm. So how do we then move forward the next time? So that's what we do. We do a lot of planning. We do a lot of intentional work with our staff. And, you know, it's, for me as a leader, it's about creating that environment that is the breeding ground for creativity. You want to create, you have to be the fertile soil that allows your creative people to thrive.
Gotcha. Talking about fertile soil, we were speaking earlier about how there seems to be a disproportionate amount of winners coming from the Middle East versus South Africa. Mm. Not sure if that's going to play out tonight, but certainly at a CAN level, we seem to have one of our weakest years.
Yeah.
And yesterday, Carl Willoughby had a panel where they literally spoke to the elephant in the room,
yeah,
the lack of performance and creativity in this industry. Right. Where do you think are we still going to go lower, or do you think we're going to turn a corner?
I think we need to really have a shift in our mindset. Mm. So for me, and I definitely appreciate that view, but for me, sitting there last night, the elephant in the room wasn't actually the UAE performance. I felt the elephant in the room was how we didn't really honor. There was an agency that won a Grand Prix last night, and we were a young agency. I think they're out of Cape Town, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And it was quiet. It wasn't this raucous response you would expect from a South African crowd for an agency of their own.
To back our people.
Because we were so disappointed with our overall performance, right, we forgot to honor them in that way. Some people were leaving while they were going up on stage to get their Grand Prix. I do not believe in stuff like that. Yeah. I think we need to be there for our people and be proud of an agency performing to that level locally and achieving a Grand Prix at Louis. It's not Indian feat at all. So for me, that was the real elephant in the room.
Right.
That if we're not able to show up as a united, like South African advertising agency, even for our own people, of course we're going to underperform. It goes without saying, you know? So I think the first step towards figuring out how we're going to actually overcome that as a country and
to build ourselves up.
And it's by honoring agencies like that. So there were two agencies last night in particular that are relatively young, relatively unknown, you know? And I think kudos to them for, on a night where the UAE dominated, kudos to them for actually shining bright and actually flying the South African flag. So, of course, the usual, like, South African agencies did reasonably well, but they were the star performers amongst the UAE's, like, dominance.
Wow, great to hear. Brandon, thank you for your time. It's been an awesome conversation. Lovely to meet you, and good luck for tonight.
Thank you so much, Ben. You too. Cheers.